This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and it is the 27th of July here in Japan. Joining me on the line today is filmmaker Michael J. Murphy and legendary researcher and author G. Edward Griffin, who are currently combining forces to create a new documentary about the ongoing stratospheric aerosol geoengineering campaign, commonly known as chemtrailing. And that documentary is called What in the World Are They Spraying? And the trailer is widely available online. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me today.
Well, thanks for inviting us, James.
Yeah, thanks, James. An honor to be on your program to talk about this important issue.
Well, it is definitely an honor to have you here because this is an extremely important issue. So, Michael Murphy, let's start with you. Why don't you tell us about how you came to start working on this project with Mr. Griffin and what prompted you to take up this subject in particular?
Well, it was real interesting because, like most people, the first person that told me about the aerosol spraying, I really thought that they were completely crazy. But a couple months later, somebody had actually pointed it out and showed me a plane spraying aerosols into the sky. So naturally, I began to research this on the internet and developed a curiosity. But what really had propelled me into becoming more and more interested was back in February, where there was a geoengineering conference in San Diego, which I had attended, and I wanted to learn more about these programs. And for 3 days, geoengineers proposed their programs of stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, which essentially were programs to spray 10 to 20 million tons of aluminum and barium into the upper atmosphere for what they said was the stated goal of cooling the planet, which is very shocking because during that meeting I had learned actually, A, how damaging both aluminum and barium, and we can talk a little more about that further into the program, about the toxicity, both not only to human health but also to ecosystems. I also met several people who have been doing rain, soil, and water tests, which revealed just that, massive amounts of aluminum and barium all around the world. Of course, when I was there, I had asked the geoengineers about the current deployment of these programs, and they emphatically denied it. However, during that time, I met many people who told me that they had a mountain of evidence that not only suggests that these programs are ongoing, but also destroying ecosystems and human health literally around the globe. So I developed just a great concern because of what I had learned there. And I had written some articles and began to film. And that's when we hooked up with Mr. Griffin. We actually went over to his house to interview him on a different subject. And I said, you know, I said, Ed, can I talk to you about an issue commonly called chemtrails? And he said, you know what, I'm interested in that subject. So we started talking, and I kind of shared with him what we had found, which was very shocking. And he said, you know, this is not good. He said, I'd like to get involved with this project if I could. And that's pretty much how we came together.
So what prompted you to go to Mr. Griffin in the first place?
Well, it was not on the issue of geoengineering. We were just doing some interviews for a different project. So we obviously had seen a lot of his work, not only on many of the different documentaries, but also his deep intellectual work on books such as The Creature from Jekyll Island. So it was an honor to come out and to interview him about some of those issues. So it was really just the respect that we had for both he and his work that prompted us to go out there.
Well, I can certainly understand that. Obviously, G. Edward Griffin brings a lot of respect with him from a lot of people who do know his other work on things like the Federal Reserve. So Mr. Griffin, what really was your interest in the chemtrailing issue, and how long have you been exploring this?
Well, I guess the honest answer to that is that my interest began probably around 10 years ago when I started to observe it in the sky. I thought, what in the world are they spraying? And it was amazing to me from the very get-go how many people could look up in the sky and either not see the spraying at all, not notice it, and it was so obvious, or if they did see it, they were perfectly content to accept the explanation that, oh, it was just normal jet trails, you know, vapor trails. And to me, it seems so absurd that this that anybody could believe that when you compared real jet trails, which I've been watching all my life. You know, they're little tiny vapor things that travel along behind the aircraft, don't last probably more than maybe half a mile behind the aircraft, and then they are absorbed back into the atmosphere. And then you compare that with these vaporous trails that spread all over the sky, and within an hour or two they've milked up the skies and can hardly see the sun. What do you mean? How can you believe that that is just a plain jet trail? So I became kind of curious not only about the jet trails, but I became curious about the way to which in which people can be convinced of something that is so obviously not true simply because they heard it on the television or they hear it from some authority. And so I was in a state of somewhat, I guess you'd say, anger about that and great disappointment in the human race that so many people could swallow this line. And then I thought that, you know, surely somebody will do a great expose on this, somebody better qualified than I. I was tempted at one time. I thought, no, there are plenty of engineers and pilots and scientists who should tackle this. Well, the years went by, and there really wasn't anything of, you know, definitive on this study. So when Mike and Paul showed up at my house that day, and they were already determined to do something with it, and they apparently had the skills to do it, I thought, well, isn't this an opportunity to jump on board and see if I can help? So it was a thing that grew over many years, James.
Right. Well, that's very interesting because I have almost the exact same reaction to the way that people are able to convince themselves that what they're seeing is completely normal and usual. And I remember at one point trying to point out to someone that what we were seeing was not cloud and that we had just watched the sky be painted over, but they were just unable to see that. And I think that is one of those frustrating things that that really makes you question people's ability to understand something of this size and magnitude. So that's why I think this documentary is so hotly anticipated and that everyone is looking forward to it. And just on that note, I understand that we can get some information about this from truthmediaproductions.com, but is there a website for this documentary specifically?
Well, there isn't one really that's up and functioning yet. There will be, of course, as soon as the production is available. But anyone who wants to learn as much as we already have about it and wants to get online and be notified when the video is finally released, they can come to our Reality Zone website. That's pretty easy to remember. It's realityzone.com. And the minute you get there, one of the big advertisements, one of the big panels that'll be right there on screen is a notification about becoming an angel, is how we say it. We were looking initially and still are looking for people to help us finance this project, and we've been very, very happy with the positive response we've received. If it hadn't been for people from all over the world helping us out financially, there's no way that we could have put this production together as quickly as we have been. But other than that, people can come online, see what we have already published about it, and be ready to receive a notice when the DVD is finally released. So that's realityzone.com.
I certainly hope people will check that out and think about becoming an angel investor in this, because it is so important that people do support the documentary filmmakers who are not being funded by major corporations. So on that note, Michael Murphy, I understand you've been working on this for quite some time. How much footage do you have, and how many interviews have you conducted?
Oh my God, we literally have hundreds of hours of footage we've conducted. I would say roughly about 60 different interviews, and this comes from just a wide range of professionals, physicians, scientists, people who are really qualified to talk about what we're finding. What we're finding, can I go into that, James?
Absolutely, please do.
It was interesting because, again, I'm going to go back to geoengineers' models, which were proposing dumping 10 to 20 million tons of aluminum and barium into the atmosphere. People are finding elevated levels and alarming levels around the world. And I'll give you an example. of the snow on Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta is removed far from any industry. As a baseline, it should have about 7 parts per billion of aluminum. A test was done by Francis Mangles, a retired 35-year USDA biologist, and he had sent the test into a government lab, and it revealed test results in drinking water allowables, before I tell you the numbers, will only allow for 50 parts per billion. Government action, according to Francis, is required at 1,000 parts per billion. The test that was taken on Mount Shasta revealed 61,100 parts per billion of aluminum. That is extremely high. And I want to say that because I want to go into this. Aluminum is very toxic, both to human health, and God, for the past 7 years, we've seen an incredible increase in aluminum-related illness. It's going through the roof, such as Alzheimer's and many different neurological disorders. Barium, which is being found in very high contents, lowers our immune system, creates high blood pressure and a bunch of other illness. And the real thing that we had initially started finding was in Northern California, as well as around the world, they're starting to see a die-off in the forests, and insects are dying, amphibians are dying. So when we went up to Northern California, that was one of the parts, one of the many different locations that we went to in filming this, and had spoken to many professionals, they had started testing. And what they found that the pH of their soil was at a minimum 10 times the normal pH. So they began asking questions, why is the pH changing? And what they found was massive amounts of free-form aluminum. Free-form aluminum, when it falls into soil, will increase the pH. Now, in most soils, it will increase the pH. A lot of plant life and a lot of forests require an acidic soil to grow. So they believe, without a shadow of a doubt, because it's what they're finding in the rain, and there is a correlation between when trails are present and when they're not. When they're not, these levels seem to come down a little bit, that this is the cause of the mass die-off that they're seeing. And with that being said, we can talk a little more perhaps later about the aluminum-resistant seed that's the patent is owned by the USDA. And that's very scary in itself.
In fact, that was exactly what I was going to bring up with you. Of course, we saw Monsanto very recently talking about adding aluminum resistance genes to certain subsistence crops. And it is extremely interesting that that comes along just as aluminum levels are exploding in soils.
Yes,
yeah,
one could get pretty suspicious about that, but of course that's not conclusive. I think the research that Michael and Paul have done shows that there are parts of the world where the soil is naturally rich in aluminum, and it's considered to be low yield or low productive soil. And so therefore, Monsanto and other seed producers can logically claim, well, they're just developing the aluminum-resistant crops for those parts of the world. But, those of us who have been watching Monsanto for these years have a very highly raised eyebrow over the whole thing.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and for good reason. But, of course, we should give benefit of the doubt where there is some to be given, because we want to build the strongest case possible. So let's talk about some of the other things that you've uncovered. Obviously, you have talked to a lot of people who are skeptical that there is stratospheric aerosol geoengineering happening right now. So what kinds of points do they raise, and what information have you been able to surface that contradicts that?
Well, I mean, there's literally a mountain of evidence coming up around the world that these programs, A, are real, and B, a threat to human health and ecology. Now, we've spoken to a lot of people who want to always go back to NASA science about contrails, and they talk about how contrails can change depending on the humidity and the level and these different weather conditions, which, it might be true, but they never address the fact about aerosol spraying. They always come back to contrails, and I always tell them this: I believe in contrails. I've believed in contrails my entire life. I don't refute that contrails are real. However, what we are seeing and what we're finding, it's really hard to cover up the mass contamination that's been found around the world, and they cannot address that issue. And I always tell them, you know, once you tell me where the massive amounts of aluminum and barium are coming from, if you can identify that, then I will stop looking into this. But nobody has been able to do that. We have also just gotten back from a trip from Washington, D.C., and I had several interviews with congressmen and people in Congress, and then a few senators as well, and none of them were willing to really address the issue of current deployment of these programs. So, you know, it appears that when you start bringing facts to this issue, which we certainly are, and we believe that through our investigation, we're bringing not only a mountain of evidence, but proof that these programs are real, nobody has been able to refute us publicly. Now, we have had critics and many different websites who appear to be pro-contrail and criticize a lot of our work. Ed and I have made efforts to contact these people to get them to interview with us, and all of them up to date have wished to remain anonymous. So that draws a lot of skepticism about their credibility as well.
Well, it's very hard to debate someone who wants to remain anonymous, isn't it? So it is interesting that they would choose to go that route. But, well, that is very interesting. So let's move out a little bit and talk a little bit about an issue that I think is, in one sense, it's just semantics, but in another sense, it seems to be a sort of an underlying point of this debate, that a lot of people shy away from the term chemtrails, and we see all sorts of different proposed names for this, including stratospheric aerosol geoengineering. To what extent do you think that that's merely a semantic debate, and to what extent does that actually go to the root of defining what it is we're facing?
Well, I'll address that one. I think it's primarily semantic, because it's really basically the same thing. It says that I think what they're trying to do, James, is hang sort of a negative aura to the word chemtrails to make it sound as though anybody who even uses that word is a little bit wacko. I think they're trying to do that. They're not succeeding, but I think they'd like very much to do that. I don't really care what you call it. The fact is that you can look up in the sky and you can take the measurements of what's falling out of the sky, and you can see that those are chemtrails. So, yeah, I think it's semantic primarily. What do you think, Mike? Do you think it's a substantive difference in this?
In terms of the words that we use? Absolutely not. You know, I think of like many different things, what they're trying to do, because... Yeah, this movement, there's a mass awakening going on, and I would say 90% of the people aware of these programs do know them as chemtrails. So I think like any other movement, there's an attempt to co-opt the terms that we use. And, you know, I'll tell you, I knew about the chemtrail issue a year and a half ago very much. But if somebody came up to me and said, hey, I've got some incredible information about geoengineering programs that you might be interested in, I would have told them, you know, I'm not really interested in the geoengineering. I'm kind of starting to research the chemtrail issue. And that's what I think is their attempt to change the word. So I've been very careful to try and use both words right now so that people can make the connection between both.
Well, I agree, too, and I have used the term geoengineering because I think it's important for people to understand sort of the underlying ideology or the underlying purpose of these programs, which is a grand scale attempt to really terraform the Earth in a way, or to geoengineer what the Earth that we're used to. So you have gone from a perspective of very, very much skepticism of this issue to one of constructing the one of the definitive documentaries on the subject. So obviously you've undergone quite a transformation, Mr. Murphy. So what are some of the most surprising things that you've uncovered during your research into this?
Well, you know, we found a lot, and we're really taking this from, we know that these are more than just geoengineering programs. A lot of different things other than aluminum and barium have been found. However, the market that we're addressing, the people that we're addressing are mainly people who might be unaware of what these programs are. And while we would like to go in depth to some of the other issues, such as that people propose and investigate maybe the depopulation agenda with it, perhaps the weather modification. We address these very lightly, but we're trying to keep it real basic. So, you know, the most surprising, I think, thing that we found are the massive amounts of these substances. What really shocked me, though, was the aluminum-related illness that's going through the roof. I really believe with all my heart that many people are not only getting ill, but are dying from these programs. But what shocked me was the devastation that we're seeing to the ecology. And this is on a worldwide scale. And that really shocked me. It scared me. And I think it needs to become public. So with that being said, that's probably the most shocking, the human health and the ecological effects with it. But then, you know, and we kind of expected this, our public officials, when addressed, literally some of them, when we were in Washington, D.C. last week, literally ran from us in an attempt to get away from addressing this issue. So we have had, you know, some people running for political office, Shalene Nightingale, who's publicly spoken about it, Mark Reed as well, who's running for Congress. And, you know, we definitely honor that, but it appears that something happens after they take office. And I think it's obvious to a lot of people what that something may be. But it's not shocking, but to me it's very concerning.
Have you been able to connect any names of individuals or companies to this program or tie it into any specific patents or anything along those lines?
Well, we absolutely have. And some of those patents will be in the film, and some of those names will be in the film. We think it's real important to disclose that information at the proper time. So we're going to save that one for the film, I think.
Well, certainly understandable. So, Mr. Griffin, how would you define your role in this documentary, and what kind of work have you done on it?
Well, I guess the best definition of my role here is as a cheerleader, and I've helped perhaps bring attention. I helped raise some money for the film through the people who are subscribers to my website. I've offered a lot of suggestions, and I'm willing to participate in the film. I have a little bit of a role. You'll probably see my face in there and my voice. But primarily, I'm just sort of a well-wisher and a participant. The real work is being done by Mike and Paul.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, tell us a little bit more about Truth Media Productions and the work that you've been doing with Paul previous to this documentary.
Essentially, Paul and I started working together just covering issues that go beyond the corporate mainstream media. So our focus, initially, we had met. I'm fairly new to Los Angeles, got here in October, and we had met during an H1N1 event that we were covering to try and spread awareness. So after that, we just started, actually, our first film together was a general chemtrail film where we went out onto Hollywood Boulevard and we just interviewed the general public and asked them what it was that they were seeing being sprayed out of the airplanes. Paul did a fantastic job cutting that video, and it literally went viral around the internet. And we decided that we had a pretty good team, he and I working together in terms of film. So what we had planned to do, and this was all out of pocket, and it was simply by hobby, we just went out and started talking to people who were running for political office and talking to people like Mr. Griffin and getting interviews. And the interviews were very effective. So our work together, we seem to be a very good team. And God, now we have a third part of that team, and we're just couldn't be more excited about what each and every one of us brings to this project. It's just been incredible.
Excellent. Well, it is exciting to hear that because, as we've discussed, this is such an important issue. But I think, well, let me open this up to either of you or both of you if you'd like to address it. But I think one of the things that a lot of people have difficulty in dealing with when we're talking about this subject is just the scope and of what's going on, and to think that there is a program that is not being fully admitted to, that is doing all of this, not only in America, of course, but around the world, and is currently, as you say, likely causing people to fall fall ill and even die. The scale of what's going on is just very difficult for a lot of people to comprehend. How do you address that sort of cognitive dissonance that a lot of people feel when facing this issue?
Well, James, I think you've really hit the nail on the head. I think that this is the primary reason so many people are not able, and I'll put that word in quotes, not able to see what they're looking at, is because subconsciously they know that if they really see what they see, then that brings up this very issue that you have raised, which is, well, that means, what does that mean? That means that we're being fooled. That means there are hidden agendas. That means that we're in big, big trouble. That means there are, you know, things like this going on, and that means that our government and our leaders and our media and all of our leaders are complicit in some way in this cover-up or in this operation, and nobody wants to believe that. And so, therefore, what's the alternative? They say, well, that's not what I really see, therefore, because if I see what I really see, I'm in big trouble.
And James, I think we do a very effective job in addressing that the way that we do, because for us, it's not a real complicated matter. We have geoengineers who have spoken about these models, and there's been many publications about the stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, spraying aluminum and barium. There's a Hughes aircraft patent, which calls for the disbursement of those very aerosols. And then if you go to part three, that's what's being found in massive amounts, the aluminum, barium, and everything else. So we're going around investigating, talking to professionals, but then our trip from Washington, D.C., you know, made it real apparent, not that everybody knew about this issue. I don't think everybody that we spoke to did, but, you know, I really came back with the feeling that, yes, there's definitely people who are concerned about covering this issue, and we'll go back to Congressman Dennis Kucinich back in October 2001, in his Space Preservation Act, specifically wrote for the ceasing, and he used the word of chemtrails. A few months later, that word and that part of the bill had been removed, and we haven't heard another word. So we think we have a real simple model, but a very compelling model when we tell the story. And we've literally been very effective in waking many people up. If you look at on YouTube, under What in the World Are They Spraying, the official trailer, you will see just in about a month and a half, we've had, I think our site is up to 200,000 hits, but many people have piggybacked off of that. So just on our trailer alone, we've had about, oh, I'd say 250,000 hits. And with some of the articles that we've written, I'm sure we've reached, you know, probably over 1 million people. So it's not a real difficult model that we're showing people, and because of that, I think many people have awakened to it, because there's proof. You know, we simply have proof, and I think that's what people have failed to address in a sense when addressing this issue.
Well, absolutely. I think all of the indications are that a lot of people are overcoming their cognitive dissonance to start looking at that proof. So I'm glad that this documentary is coming along when it is, because I think this is an important time to be getting this information to people. But I guess the other side of looking at this is to think of such a monumental international and secretive campaign going on that is likely causing illness and even death. Obviously, this is not the type of thing that could be admitted to without people suffering very serious consequences. And if there was justice working, obviously, there would be people who would be put on trial for crimes against humanity and this type of thing, which means obviously it's not the type of thing that's going to be very easy to expose or to get any sort of public admissions to from elected officials or anyone of that sort. So what exactly are we planning to accomplish in I guess bringing this to public light, and then how do you see that type of movement unfolding from there?
Well, I think that realistically all we can do with this project is just bring it to light. Now, what happens after that is a good question, and it's an important issue. We've talked about this, that we can't just put this video out there and say, okay, we've done our job. I think somewhere in the aftermath of that, we'll have to invite people to associate with each other and perhaps form some kind of a movement. We're kind of looking at that right now. It would have to be a nonpartisan movement. It would have to be divorced from just about all the other issues, because people may have different opinions on this, that, and the other thing, but we would like to bring them all together in unity on the need to bring an end to these things. So, yeah, we're definitely looking at that, but right now we don't have anything really ready to announce.
So what kind of timeline are we looking for with this film? When do you expect it will be released?
Go ahead, Mike.
You want to get that? expected release is fall 2010. So we've literally been working tirelessly, and I think people aren't going to believe it, but we've almost completed the film in less than half a year. And we literally have hundreds of hours of footage. So we are pushing hard. We're working hard. So we're going to go with fall 2010, and we're going to leave it open at that. However, the closer that we get, we're going to make more announcements with the specific release date.
Yeah, we're already having the joy of corresponding with people and setting up premieres around the country. So, you know, movie theater premieres.
Excellent. Very exciting. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. And certainly I hope you two will come back on the program once the documentary has been released, so we can talk about some of the specifics in more detail. But
sure, happy to do that.
Excellent. Well, it is truly an honor speaking with both of you today, and I certainly hope that that this goes well for both of you, and I'm sure there are many people who are very much looking forward to this. So once again, tell us about the website and how people can get involved with the project.
Well, the most direct path to the project would be realityzone.com. And that's where you can sign up and get on the mailing list for the announcement. That's where you can help us financially if you wish. That's where you can order a copy of the DVD when it's released, get one of the first copies out. And whatever happens after that, you would definitely be on our list and would be informed.
Yeah, so I would encourage everyone to go ahead and do that, just to get the name so that we can keep you abreast. But also, if you want to see some of the clips that will be used in the film, of course, you can also go to Truth Media Productions. My email is on there, so if you want to email me as well. However, definitely make it onto Reality Zone as well, so that that we can send you updates with where we are.
All right, excellent. Well, are there any final thoughts that either of you would like to leave with the listeners today?
I really just want to encourage people to look into this and start looking at the research and looking at the facts with these programs. And once awakened, this is not only something that me or Ed or Paul can do together. We literally need people to wake up and start waking other people up, because we figure probably 90% of the population is unaware of these issues. And within that poll of 90% of the people, there are probably many who would do something and take action if they were aware of it. So, you know, one of the things that I try and do is encourage people who are aware of this issue to continue pointing it out and raising awareness. I really, really strongly feel that the future of humanity is dependent on it. So please just look into this, address it, and try and wake other people up.
And Mr. Griffin?
Well, I would just say amen, brother, to all of that. I would also prepare people for a very interesting and educational experience, and also prepare them for a little bit of flack, because we're opposing some very powerful forces here. And as we approach the finish line here, I can already see the momentum of opposition building. I see a lot of attention being spent on the internet and in the media, other forms of the media, where they've just all of a sudden accelerated the effort to convince everybody that, you know, what's going on in the skies is just perfectly normal. They never did that before, but in the last few months, they've almost become panicky about it. And so I would imagine that the next step will be some kind of major attack against us and against our video and against anybody who speaks out. So I'm just sort of warning everybody that this is going to be very exciting and very important, and I'm glad we're living in these exciting times, because we're going to have a chance to really make a difference in the world.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's exactly what I'd like the listeners to focus on, because it is through our efforts that we will make the difference in the world. So thanks once again for all of the work that you're doing, and thanks for joining me today.
All right, thanks for inviting us, James.
Yeah, thanks again, James. Really appreciate you for covering this issue. Thank you.